This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 16th. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, that's right. It is Tuesday morning. It's time to talk to Christy, who joins us the third Tuesday of every month for the CHA show. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Good. It's so good to have you back. I always enjoy these episodes. You know, even though I'm a driver, I get a lot out of them.
It is fun, you know, and it's amazing how much similarity there is, you know, in all the different disciplines and how they all fit together.
That is true. And horses are horses. It doesn't matter what we're doing with them. They all act the same pretty much all the time. So that's why we love them.
Consistency.
That's right.
We're the ones that are inconsistent.
That is true. And I get yelled at about that all the time by my wife. I get.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, she knows.
Well, and I think that's the job of a horse husband. We get yelled at a lot. So that's what. No, she actually doesn't yell. Jennifer's not a yeller. But I do get corrected occasionally when I'm doing something I shouldn't with my pony. So that does happen on occasion.
And it goes both ways. You know, my husband, too, bless his heart, every now and then, we used to go trail riding quite a bit. Actually, we went to Fort Robinson, Nebraska, and we've been to a bunch of different places. BC, we say, before children. We did a lot of trail riding together, and he would do the same thing. We'd be out on a trail ride, and I'd be, like, trying to tell him how to do stuff, and he'd just say, hey, here's the deal. I'm just going to go on a loose rein, and I'm just going to let my horse do what he's supposed to do. And I'll tell you, the horse that he was on really appreciated him for that, not messing with him, just going on a loose rein and enjoying the scenery.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it is, it's a habit, though. It's something that wives, especially, you know, horse women, if they're the horse women, and you got us guys who didn't know a thing about horses before we come in, it can be 20 years later, and they're still doing the same thing. And I think it's just ingrained that you have to.
Probably. We can't help ourselves.
That's it. You just can't help it. You teach lessons, and you see these people doing things. And I tried taking lessons. Now, I can talk about it away. I can say anything I want about Jennifer today, because she's not here. So I have to watch what I say on every other episode. But
that's right. You can't defend yourself.
That's right. But you know what? I think it is true. You do these lessons all the time, and then you see your husband. But I tried taking lessons with my wife. That didn't work. That was early on, very early on when we first got married. And it was like, if you're going to take lessons. So I actually took lessons from one of her working students.
Good idea, though.
That worked much better. Yeah,
it really is. And I'll tell you, as a wife and also a mom, yeah, giving lessons to the husband and also giving lessons to the sons, both of those don't go so well. So you just find other people you respect to do that for you.
Does it work any better with daughters?
I don't know the answer to that. I think
it depends on the age, right? If when they're 13, no.
That's probably true.
You can probably get away with that up to about the age of 9. And
right, then they say, not so much.
Yeah, exactly. And then when mom becomes the most despicable human being in the world, where we can't even stand hearing them talk, then they have to go to somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you what's so funny about this conversation we've just been having, Glenn, is it ties in perfectly to what we're going to be talking about here later in the show, is we're going to be talking about instincts. whether they're human instincts or whether they're horse instincts, and how we can work with them together in order to achieve more with our riding or our driving or our horse handling on the ground or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think it's just instinctual for some of us horse ladies to, become a little bit overbearing to our poor partners or our children when we're trying to teach them how to do things around the horses that we deem is the correct way to do it.
It's interesting you talk about instincts too, because I think that there are some people that are more inclined and it's easier for them to be around the horses and instinctually understand what's going on. And then there's those people that love horses and love being around them, but they just don't have that instinct or that common sense or whatever you want to call it that some people have instinctually, and they just have to work harder at it. And that's true of anything, whether you're playing tennis or, you know, whatever. There's some people that seem to have a natural talent for it, and others that will have to work harder at it.
You know, I think that's true. But I'll tell you, for those of you out there listening that you think that you're on the side where you have to work harder, I honestly feel, and this is having seen a whole lot of people become riding instructors, that those of us that it doesn't become instinctual to us, that have to work pretty hard at it, become better riding instructors, because then we can explain it better to our students. Whereas for those people that it's very instinctual to do the things either on top of the horse or while driving or whatever, I think those folks have a harder time explaining because they just get frustrated and just look at the person and go, why aren't you just picking this up like I just pick it up? Whereas those of us that have struggled go, okay, I've been down the same road you're going down, and here's 10 different ways to try to solve it so that you can make it work.
I taught sales for a lot of years in the investment world, and I had been selling investments for a long time. And then I taught sales to new salesmen. And when I started teaching sales after having done it for a very long time, I realized, one, how much I knew and didn't know I knew. You know, that was one thing, because you just do it. You're just doing it, and you don't think about the mechanics of what you're doing. Where in riding, we have to think about mechanics. You do get to the point where there's muscle memory, and you don't have to think about it as much. And then when you go teach it, you actually become a better rider. I became a better salesperson after I started teaching sales. No question.
Yes, I would absolutely agree. Because, you know, we all learn different. And so we normally teach like how we learn. So if we learn in a certain way, like let's say we're more visual or auditory or kinesthetic, right? The hands-on would be the kinesthetic. We tend to go ahead and teach that way. So if we're very auditory and we can listen to somebody babble and just really pick everything up and that's great, then we're probably pretty good in the classroom and we're probably pretty good in a riding lesson because we can really listen. But if we're more visual and it's a private riding lesson and you're riding by yourself or a group lesson but nobody's better than you, you guys are all the same, how do you have anything to kind of look at? So what we teach a lot to our instructors is we say you have to teach every single lesson to the visual, auditory, and the kinesthetic learner. You have to do it to all of them. And sometimes that can put us kind of at an interesting place if that's not what we're used to as a learner and we don't learn well that way. We think, well, I'm not going to ignore the visual. I don't learn that way. And it's like, no, you've got to do them all.
Well, now let's now we got all serious here. So,
I know,
so
it's early. Good. Like
so early in the show. We do have, tell us about the guests. See, we don't have Jennifer here. Why don't you tell us about the guests we have coming up?
I would love to. So our topic, like I said earlier, is how to work successfully with you and your horse's instincts to achieve more. And today on the show, we actually have two gentlemen, and both of the gentlemen are going to be coming to our international conference in the fall, which we're thrilled to have them to be able to come and chat with everybody. So the first one on the show today is Terry Myers. And Terry Myers lives in Ohio. And he has done, all kinds of different things. He's a trainer and an instructor and a clinician. And he has done stock and hunter horses, a variety of things. So he'll be on. And then also Van Hargis. And Van is in Texas, and he's currently in Sulphur Springs. He also does a lot of clinic work around the country, goes to a lot of the equine expos. He's worked cattle. He's also done quite a bit with English and Western. So I'm really thrilled to have both of these true horsemen on our show today.
Very good. And that kind of ties into, I know they're going to be involved in the annual conference here that you have coming up. And well, let's talk about that a little bit. But first, let's listen to a little bit about the conference.
Come and join the Certified Horsemanship Association for our annual conference October 22nd through the 25th, 2015, at the American Quarter Horse Association Hall of Fame and Museum and the Holiday Inn. This event is open to the public, and participants will be able to ride on great horses provided by West Texas A&M University and the National Reining Horse Association. Great horsemanship sessions, education, vendors, silent auction, networking, and much more. Visit www.chainstructors.com and go to the conference tab to register today. We are excited to meet you.
Well, that's, yeah, next, boy, you got me hungry for barbecue just thinking about this, by the way.
I'll tell you, it's been a good one to plan. The caterers we have coming are amazing. Everything from Tex-Mex to barbecue to steak. You know, it's going to be a food fest as well as, of course, a lot of education and fun horses.
I was just looking at some of the, you know, I was looking at some of the keynote speakers, and you've got Kim Brown with Stable Management Magazine. I know her, and she will be great as a keynote.
I'm thrilled to have her, and I've never heard her do this talk that she does. Luck is where preparation meets opportunity. But it sounds great, and I know she's very vivacious and very fun, so I'm sure she'll keep everyone very entertained.
Who are some of your other keynotes that you have?
We've got Julie Goodnight, who, of course, is a master instructor with us, and many of you know her from RFD-TV, where she's the horse master. So she'll be coming, and she's doing a variety of topics from the science of cueing your horse correctly to working with advanced riders. For those of you out there that are teachers, she'll be helping you with more exercises for your advanced folks, and then how to school the lesson horse, too. You know, sometimes our lesson horses can get a little sour, so she'll be helping us to be able to keep them fresh even at the end of the summer after they've been very busy. And then we also have a National Reining Horse Association is coming and doing their Rider Reiner program. We did that for the first time last year in Kentucky, and we're thrilled to have them be able to come this year while we're in Texas. So for those of you that want to get an opportunity to ride a reiner, you can come join us for that.
Wow, and a few of those horses from the university should know how to do that.
Oh, absolutely. And West Texas A&M, they're a big intercollegiate program.
Sure.
They belong to Intercollegiate Horse Show Association and do a lot with them. So they have some great hunter horses as well as Western horses.
Yeah, that's cool. And then Van, who we're having on today, will be, you know, one of your keynote speakers talking about, are you focused on success? So that should be interesting as well.
Yes, he's going to be our keynoter during our awards banquet.
That's terrific. Well, this sounds like a lot of fun. How many people, is it large? So if people were thinking about coming for the first time, is it a huge event? What's the story?
You know, it's nice, Glenn, because we do all of the meals as part of the event. So breakfast is always included at the hotel, and then lunches are always communal, and so is dinner. So you get to sit at round tables with 10 people, and you get to really meet people and get to know them. We normally have in between 200 and 400 that come each year, and they're from all over, every state in the union, provinces of Canada. We still have quite a few members there that come down for it. So we do have a large variety, and it ranges from people that are very professional riding instructors to people that are just getting started as riding instructors to horse trainers to barn managers and equine facility owners, and then the average horse owner or the average person who wants to get started in horses and wants to find out more. So, again, open to the public, opportunity to come and ride on horses and not just have to sit and observe but actually get to play.
I just like so many different topics, too. Basic health care for the school horse, how to develop feel in riders, and then Dutch oven cooking and fire building. See,
right.
I picked that one out, went, oh, I love my Dutch oven, too. And I, you know what? Come to think about it, I haven't cooked in the Dutch oven a long time. I got to get that thing out again.
You would love coming and meeting. We call them the Black Hat Brigade because, you know, after Labor Day in September, much like when you have to put your white sandals away as a girl because those aren't allowed anymore, well, in hats, I guess, according to our trail encampment boys, you get out the felt hats in the
That's
fall.
Right. That's
and
correct.
Prior to that, it's the straw, right?
Yep. You can wear the white ones in the summer, the white straw
That's
ones.
Right. That's right. So very similar. So they come, and they're going to be doing actually a big trail challenge where people, we had a riding instructor challenge last year, and this year we're having a trail challenge where the three events are packing a horse, rope tying, and fire building.
Oh, that'd be fun. You know, I hate camping, but I love the Dutch oven. So there you go. I love grilling, but as long as I can sleep in my own bed, I'm good.
Oh,
I'll cook outside all day, and I'll eat outside. Just I want to sleep in my own bed. Thank you very much.
Well, some of the food, Glenn, in the Dutch oven, like when they make a cobbler, whether it's peach or cherry or apple, oh, it is so good. And it's so delicious. And, you know, the when they do roast beef in the Dutch oven, and it's amazing how many things you can do in the Dutch oven and how many people you can feed. Like the rolls that they do, I think they're the best rolls I've ever had. And then, of course, good old cowboy coffee that still has the grounds at the bottom. You know, you've got to have that, too.
And not a drop of cream anywhere to be found. You drink it black.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, tell everybody where they can find more information out about the conference coming up in October.
Yes, the easiest place is on our website at chainstructorswithans.com. Go to the conference tab, and it'll give you online registration. And if you register before the end of August, you get an early bird discount of $50 off. And remember, your conference registration does include all of your meals, and then you just have to do your hotel separate, or if you're driving in, of course, what have you. But it even includes your busing to and from all the locations, since we're going to be going to AQHA's Hall of Fame and Museum there for American Quarter Horse. We're going to be going over from the hotel, of course, to West Texas A&M University to ride. And then we're also going to be taking a tour of the Palo Duro Canyon on the Friday night.
Wow, very cool. Very cool. And, of course, barbecue, barbecue, barbecue. Just saying.
That's right.
Well, let's talk about this. I had found this list I sent over to you today and said, I think you're the perfect one to talk about this. And this was actually on a website called healthfitnessrevolution.com. I'd never heard of it, but I came across this list. And it was the top 10 health benefits of owning a horse. And, you know, we all think that we're probably a little bit healthier than most people. One, we spend more time outdoors. We have to clean stalls. We have to move around. We have to move our horses around. If you're riding, you're actually doing some physical activity. I can't say exactly the same for drivers. But, sorry, drivers, I'm one of you. I get it. But we are a little bit more active. But there are some things on this list that I didn't think about. And I thought it was interesting that a non-horse website or blog posted this.
Hey, it's wonderful. It just shows, you know, horseback riding and being with our horses is a sport. It really is a sport. It is not just a hobby or a pastime. It's something where if you stay physically fit and you keep yourself going, boy, you can achieve a whole lot.
But Christy, the horse does all the work. Isn't that the one we hear all the time? Isn't that it? We hear that every time from non-horse people.
I love that. And then I say, come take a riding lesson, and I make them drop their stirrups.
That's right. Or do a sitting trot for half an hour. Or
Absolutely.
Not a sitting trot, do a posting trot for half an hour.
Yeah, or go into two-point position.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. And then they go,
never mind. 2 minutes.
And meanwhile, they're sweating, and the horse doesn't have a drop of sweat on it.
Exactly.
Who's working?
Don't you love that one, though?
I do.
All right, let's go over this list.
I think it's great. So I love the first one. We just talked about it. Keeps you physically active. So obviously you're going to be outdoors. And I love how it said in all kinds of weather. Because, the horse has got to eat. Doesn't matter if it's minus 30 or 130. Horse has got to eat.
And he still poops. He still poops.
Right.
Even if it freezes on the way out, he's still pooping.
So there it is. Cleaning stalls, grooming, feeding, raking hay, pushing wheelbarrows. They all burn calories and build muscle.
There you go. Fixing fence. All that other stuff they never mention.
I love it. And then the second one, I love this one. It builds self-confidence. It sure does. If you think about a partnership with a 1,000-pound animal, right? It really helps. And it's leadership training, talking about how you need to be the leader, right, over the horse. And so that way you have a better partnership because that horse wants to make sure that when that wolf comes, you're going to be protecting that horse from that wolf, which in probably our day and age is the stroller. Or is the mountain bike, but wants to make sure that you're going to take care of them. So absolutely, it builds self-confidence.
And reduces stress. Oh, now, I would say it depends on the day.
True. Sometimes it makes you more stressed.
Exactly. Depends on the day and how everybody's doing that day. I'm just kidding.
But no, it is true. But I agree. I do agree. It says right here it decreases blood pressure, things like that. Because, of course, it's physical exercise again. So that's good. And I love this one, keeps you socially active. And it says, take riding lessons. Because, you know, if you do go out and you take a riding lesson, whether you're doing a private lesson with just your instructor or whether you're doing a group lesson, it's really fun to get to meet other people with a similar interest as yours, and it does become very social. We have a lot of barns around the country that will do like a, during the day, you know, a lesson for moms or a lesson just for dads or a lesson just for teenagers or whatever, and they try to kind of group it with people with similar interests. So you might even build friendships out of it.
Yeah, and you know, I think that happens a lot at barns, where especially boarding stables, you know, where there's a lot of people around. If you have the horses at home, I'm not, you know, and you're not showing or you're just riding, then it might not be as much the case. But boy, if you're at a boarding stable, a lot of those kids become friends for life, and the ones we had at our barn are still friends, you know, 20 years later.
I agree. And I've really been loving this. You know, this is the season that all of my riding students send me graduation announcements from high school and college. I end up paying a lot of money this time of year because I have a belief. You send me an announcement, I'm going to give you something. So they all send me an announcement.
Well, I like the next one because, you know, we're big supporters of para riding here on the Horse Radio Network and have been for years. The Para Equestrian Association actually does one episode a month of the Dressage Radio Show, and the next one was Helps Disabled Individuals Stay Active.
Absolutely, it does. You know, that horse provides movement for some of them, especially the ones that are perhaps paralyzed that wouldn't normally get that movement themselves by walking. Their body still can feel that movement with the movement of the horse, and it is really good.
I thought the next one was interesting, and I had to actually read it to understand where they were coming from. That was engages the creative side of your brain. And let me just read the first sentence. It says, training a horse brings up daily challenges that will force you to think creatively on how to train and how to solve a particular problem. I never really kind of thought about it that way as being a creative exercise.
Yeah, and I love how it brought up problem solving. You know, because there are things when we ride, like, oh, I'm having a really hard time with this lead on my horse at canter, or oh, I'm having a really hard time with this diagonal on me, or feeling it, or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, I love that problem-solving idea.
Next one was builds character.
And I love the words here, the actual words. So let's go ahead and read them. It says, character building is a natural part of horse ownership, so it teaches responsibility. Punctuality, or else that horse is going to keep neighing for its food. Sportsmanship. Frugality, true. Horses can be very expensive, so you need to kind of work on how can we do things a little bit frugally in order to make ends meet. Patience, commitment, confidence, and self-esteem.
See, when you said punctuality, you went right to horses are neighing for their food. I was thinking, that dressage judge is not waiting. The bell rang, yeah. You have 1 minute. You
That's
know,
good point.
You're done. You're getting a zero. You're out.
So. Very good point. Either way.
Yep. I remember getting up many a time at 3 a.m. and driving to Maryland for shows because we had to be there because it never fails. The further you are away from an event or a show that you're going to, the earlier your time will be.
Yes.
That's a rule. That's a rule.
Waking up in the dark is a very common theme with horse showing.
It promotes a union with nature.
I love that. Good old vitamin D, being outside and enjoying the fresh air can do wonders for your mental and your physical health.
And then the next one, I'm going to change. It says maintains bone mass, I say, or breaks it. One or the other. It's going to do something to those bones. One of the two is going to happen to your bones.
We hope the former and not the latter, though, Glenn. That's what we hope. Well, and I'll tell you, for those of you women out there, I am in the stage of my life where I'm starting to look at my mother and my grandmother and what happened to them in their second half of their life, you know, that whole mid-age thing. And they were both osteopenic. Well, when you're osteopenic, you actually have to lift weights in order to not have your bones deteriorate as you start going through menopause and what have you. And, you know, there is weight-bearing exercises. Instead of having to lift your 5 and 10-pound weights, ladies, haul that 50 to 75-pound bale around, go ahead and carry the saddle, do all of that, and that's weight-bearing. So I love that.
And the last one on our list of the top 10 health benefits for owning a horse that we found at healthfitnessrevolution.com was improves digestion. Riding a horse at a walking pace stimulates the internal organs just as walking on foot does. This aids in liver function and digestion. Hey, I believe them because they're health fitness revolution. They know what they're talking about when it comes to health, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? I want to believe them because I would much rather ride my horse than walk.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, there you go. That was the top 10 health benefits of owning a horse. Good list by Horse Fitness Revolution. But now we have to go to our first guest. Why don't you introduce him?
Would love to. This is Terry Myers. And Terry Myers and I met years ago at the Ohio Equine Affair. We both attend that. He was a clinician there, and I was too. And I actually got to borrow one of his amazing horses for a talk that I was doing. So I met him there because of that, and we started to chat, and I've been kind of on him ever since to get more involved with CHA and to find out what we're about, because I think he's an incredible horseman. He has a ride-in-sync philosophy that helps riders understand how body position affects horse performance. He really loves talking about instincts of both horses and riders, and you can find him in Ohio, and when he's on, he'll tell us a little bit more about himself, but he's just a joy, stock and hunter horses that he's trained for state, national, and world competition in a variety of breeds. Hi, Terry. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us, Christy, very much.
Absolutely. So I, in my introduction of you, of course, we talked about all the different things of your Ride and Sync program, but I would love to know a little bit more. Can you share a little bit more about your background with us?
Well, I started out riding saddle seat horses. And we showed three gated horses. And from there, when I was like 12, I started running game horses for a guy. And then I went to work for a guy when I was 16 and worked pleasure horses and stuff like that, things like that. And then when I was like 24, I started riding racehorses. I did that for 3 years and galloped at the racetrack. And we built our place in 83 and have been here ever since. So I've had a really long history, and I've got to show draft horses and road ponies and fine harness ponies and kind of done everything.
Now, can you tell us where you are exactly located so that our listeners know?
We are in Ostrander, Ohio, which is northwest of Columbus, about 35 minutes, Columbus, Ohio. So we're close to the home of the All-American Quarter Horse Congress.
Yes, you are. And, of course, also the show Equine Affair where you and I met.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, we are so excited that you're going to be talking today about horse and human instincts, because we've never really talked about that on the show, and it is such an important aspect of whenever you're working with an animal of any kind, of understanding that animal. And, you know, we talk a lot, Terry, about in this day and age, as we're getting a little bit more urban and a little bit away from our agricultural roots, I don't know about what you think with your clients, but boy, I'll tell you, a lot of my riding students relate the horse to a dog because that's what they know. Yeah. And it's no further from the truth that it's not a dog because of the whole prey, predator, and all those kinds of things. So I am just thrilled today to talk to you a little bit more about instincts as they relate to horses. So how about if you start us off today with why do you include this in your training and why do you think it's an important thing to do?
I think it's really important for humans to realize their instincts before they start thinking about the horse's instincts. Like, here's a good example. When I was 15, I was showing draft horses at the Ohio State Fair and helping a guy show draft horses, and some friends of mine came over, and we decided to go up on the Midway. Well, in the Midway, there's an exhibit called Zambora. And Zambora was this woman that they would give a shot, and she turned into a gorilla. I mean, it sounds kind of goofy, but it was kind of neat. And the thing I didn't notice when we walked in, the exit sign had danger exit above it. So we're in there, and they talk how they got this woman in the deepest part of Africa, and they gave her a shot because she was sick, and before their very eyes, she turned into a ferocious gorilla. So, you know, they're going through this whole spiel, and this tent is packed. And they give her the shot, and now I know it's lights and mirrors and all that kind of thing. But before our very eyes, there's a gorilla standing in the cage. And she starts shaking the door. And the guy says, "Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. The door is electronically locked. There's no possible way." And by that time, the door slams down. The next thing I remembered, I was standing outside the tent. And so if you think about it, that's exactly what a horse would do. And the only difference is after I got out the tent, I said, "Boy, I got took." to where a horse would still be running, because they would see the danger and just, they would run till they thought they were safe. So that's kind of where I started thinking about the instincts are the same. I mean, the only difference between our instincts and a horse's instincts is that horse cannot reason, if that makes sense.
And that's part of the predator-prey example, right? Like when you have predators with their eyes are on the front of their heads, they tend to reason more to have to catch their meal. Like the pack of coyotes have to work together to chase the horses down into the canyon, and then they go ahead and they jump on the baby one because they know that that's the one that they can probably get, or the old weak one versus the ones that are a little bit more healthy, versus eyes on the side of their head, which is are the prey, which eat the grass, so they can run at any given time because they can see further around them. And so their instinct is more just to flee versus to reason about what are we going to do. I understand.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, but when you tell some people, I mean, I'm very opinionated, okay? I mean, I think that's a good thing with what I do. But if you, anything you do horseback that's instinctive to you is wrong. And you tell people this and they look at you like, are you serious? Because if you think about it, you hear everyone talk when you're doing lessons, this horse is pulling on me. And you look at them and say, it takes two to pull. And so, you know, I mean, that horse can't pull on that person unless that person is pulling on the horse. And their instincts tell them to feel that and take more hold.
True. Then they get into a tug of war.
Exactly. Exactly. And like, if you think about, I have a 3-year-old granddaughter. She was riding with me one day and I told her to turn the horse. Well, the first thing she does, she pulls the rein back. And what we do is we pick the rein up and point where we want to go when we're riding young horses. Because with horses being bilateral, as soon as you pull that rein, the opposite hip drops to the outside and you've lost all your power. And if you think about how people turn, they want to pull back on the rein to make that horse turn left or right, whichever way you're going. And every time they pull back, it takes away the power of the horse because you've taken the hip to the outside and not allowed the horse to travel through where it needs to be.
Good point. So you're saying instead of pulling back, you lift up and open.
Yeah, because I was taught a long time ago by a dressage person that there's three names for the inside rein: direct, leading, and softening. And if you look up those three terms in dictionary, you'll never find the word pull.
No.
So the inside rein is never a pulling rein. It's always a leading rein.
That makes sense. So if we're talking about instincts then in relation to horse and rider and how they sometimes get confused with one another when we're working with them, what do you do for some specific exercises to help folks get through those types of things?
Well, the first thing I try to do is I'll put them on a lunge line and teach them to ride on a lunge line because I want to take their hands away from them.
Yes.
And most people get in the habit they want to pull and stuff, and if you can take their hands away from them and teach them to get a good seat, then they're not going to depend on their hands to ride. Like when I was a kid, you know, our whole thing was you kick to go and you pull to whoa. And since 45 years later or 50 years later, I find out the legs actually make the horse go slower. It's not the hands that make the horse go slower. It's not the hands that make the horse put its head down. It's your legs and picking up his back and using and doing that sort of thing. But if you put a person on a horse for the first time and they've never been on before, their tendency when that horse goes to take off is to pull back and then grab with their legs at the same time. And when I did ride race horses, the thing I learned is you keep their face and you let that horse take a hold of the bit and they start to pull, and that's how their stride will get longer. And like if you watch the Triple Crown with American Pharoah winning it, when they cross the finish line, they turn loose of the reins and the horse will start to slow down.
It's the biggest mistake people make when they get off the track thoroughbreds and start training. If they don't know a lot about thoroughbreds, that's the biggest mistake they make.
Yeah, because they just want to pull.
Yep. And then they're wondering why they're in the next county in about 2 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But what I tell people, you know, if a horse is going to run off, there's an ocean on each side of this country. They can only run so far.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a lot of things in between here and there. coming from having a pony that bolts occasionally, there's a lot of stuff in the way.
So. You're right, Glenn. You're right. Especially if we're going north.
If it was cold. Just the two oceans, I'd be fine. It's you know what's funny, though, is we had this conversation on the driving radio show about that very topic of bolting. And, you know, the drivers have a saying, and what they say to do, what the professional drivers say to do is, look, you're not going to stop them with your reins. If you don't have your brakes aren't going to stop them either if a horse is really going, if you have brakes on your cart or carriage. You're not going to stop them that way. They tell you to point them towards something. They tell you to point them toward a wall or a side of a building. And they said one of two things is going to happen. The horse is going to be into self-preservation and is going to stop or slow down at least before he hits the wall. If he's not, your problem's over either way. So
that works.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, boy.
Keep him in the middle of the lines and just run him straight at it.
That's right. You know, I have had my pony bolt, and I have pointed him towards stuff, and he fortunately is one that really doesn't want to hit it. So
That's when you hope your horse or pony has good self-preservation instinct.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh, that's funny.
But, no, back to the exercises, Christy. And I teach people to... whichever way they want to turn, they're going to point where they want to go. Pick up the bridle rein and point. And what happens is it changes the rider's body position. And by changing that body position, it allows that horse to bend around their body and go forward. And so you're never taking the forward motion out of a horse.
And that makes good sense, Terry, because you know so many people when they get nervous, scared, or worried, like when you said the horse goes too fast or whatever, they do. They grab with their legs, they pull with their reins, they go into that fetal position.
Exactly.
And that fetal position, nothing can be done in that fetal position. But
yes.
You think about the idea of lifting your rein and opening, then you can't do anything with fetal position happening. You're going to be sitting back where you're supposed to. You're going to be sitting upright where you're supposed to. So it absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, and if you think about it, and I've said this when people, some people agree, some people don't, but once a person gets scared up there, that horse becomes the predator because he's going to take care of himself. If he doesn't trust you to take care of him, he's going to take care of himself whether you want him to or not. And that's when people get in trouble. And I know they say horses aren't predators, and I'm not talking predator the type that's going to eat somebody or something like that. But these horses know, unless you got that old solid horse that's been around forever, if you're riding a colt or whatever, you take care of them. They don't take care of you.
You know, I always thought about that predator thing. You know, it's interesting you brought that up because, you know, they may not be predators in the term, like you said. They're not out there eating a lion, okay?
Right.
But boy, they do know about self-preservation, and they will attack if they have to. I mean, you see the wild horses, and the stallions are going to protect the herd. And, you know, they'll attack if they have to do that, and they'll kick, and they'll do whatever they have to do to get the job accomplished. So, you know, I often thought that when I hear people say that they're not predators, they're prey animals. Yes, they are, but that doesn't mean they're not going to defend themselves.
Exactly. And you can take a horse. If you get a horse backed in the corner, and you don't ease up on the pressure, and they're really afraid, the next thing they're going to do, they're going to come at you. So, I mean, you know, and... not all of them, but if you get one that's truly afraid, not been worked with, they're going to try to run over top of you. And I really believe that horses can become the predator, like I said, not to eat you, but they're going to take care of themselves. And if they don't think you can take care of them, they'll take care of themselves.
Yeah, because again, that's what happens in the herd. I mean, the chief is in charge of taking care. Everybody else is hiding behind. If he fails, then somebody's stepping up.
Yeah. And you know, so out in the wild, you know, these horses, they will challenge you, come up to you and challenge you, like, stay away from my mares. And they're not run away to be scared. Then when they figure out they can get away and get everybody out, they'll leave. But, you know, I say this sometimes and people go, oh, no, you're not right on that. You can't. That doesn't make sense. But I really believe that. And I think you got to think about that when you're working with a horse. I mean, like, I just got a little Arab horse in that somebody has whooped on pretty good. And he's really scared. And the people says, well, you can't pick up his feet. You can't do this. And we got him in on Sunday. And today I picked up his feet. But he found out I wasn't going to hurt him. I never put him in a situation that he couldn't get away.
And we talk about that a lot. You know, people get worried, like, when they have a horse that pulls back. And they think, well, I have to fix that. I have to just hard tie that horse and make it stand. And you know why? Sometimes in our lesson programs, if you have a gate that locks and you have a property that's all enclosed, why does it matter if the horse, if it tends to have more of a claustrophobic tendency, can go ahead and pull back and then go over to the nearest patch of grass and eat instead of, you know, having that thrashing around? So absolutely, I love how you said that idea of you gave him some relief. He knew he could get away, and so then he allowed you to pick up his feet.
Yeah, and like, you know, like trailer loading horses. If you think about people trailer loading horses, the first thing they do is they get in the trailer and they try to pull the horse in. And if they just take the rope and let the horse and wait on the horse a little bit, if that horse trusts you at all, he's going to follow you. And he'll eventually go right in the trailer. But everybody gets there and they start pulling. This horse says, you're pulling on me. Something's got to be wrong. Or if you take how people lead a horse, they'll hold them 3 inches from the halter as tight as they can hold them. And what I do with people when I see that happening, I walk up and grab their shirt and just hang on to it. And they'll start to squirm and stuff. And I'll say, how do you think your horse feels? That's exactly how you're holding your horse. How do you think that horse feels? And they'll let go, and the horse will stand there without moving around. But their instincts say, I can't let him go. I can't let him go. And it all comes back to trust. They don't trust their horses.
And that's a good example of an exercise, because it really brings it home for them. When you do something like grab their shirt, then they say, oh, all right, I understand. Yeah, I don't like how that feels either.
Yep. But by this time, they develop a habit, and they have to learn to break their habit. They have to do it without thinking about it. And that's the trouble when people start riding. They have to develop good habits when they ride. And so if the habits aren't good, then they're going to do things like pulling and using their legs wrong and different things like that. But if they develop good habits as they start, they never get in trouble.
I think everybody also should have, you're talking about instincts, you go back to trailer loading. That is the place where we've seen more people make stupid stuff. Because I don't think loading a horse into a trailer is instinctual in any way. I think everybody should be required to take trailer loading lessons.
Yeah, trailer loading 101.
Because, you know, just nobody knows how to do it instinctually. And more people get hurt and more horses get hurt. More stupid things happen trying to load horses in a trailer.
And if you think about it, once you're in the trailer, there's nowhere for you to go if you're in there with him.
Yeah, depending on the trailer, right.
Yeah. And, you know, some of these trailers, I've seen people put themselves up in a straight load right in front of the horse. And you're thinking, are you stupid?
Yep.
But it all comes back. I heard Ray Hunt make a comment one time. There's no trailer loading issues. They're all leading issues. If your horse will lead, he'll go in a trailer.
Interesting. Is there anything Ray Hunt hasn't said that isn't profound? By the way.
No, I don't think so.
You know, eventually, 25 years, 30 years, 100 years from now, you know how everybody always talks about Confucius, and Confucius always has these sayings. Well, in the horse world, it's just going to be Ray Hunt.
I think you're right.
He's going to be the Confucius. Yeah. I don't think he's quite there yet, but he's close. He's close.
He's getting there. But, you know, if you think about the instincts difference between a horse and a person, If you push on a horse, they're going to push back against you. If you push on a person, they're going to push back against you. The difference is the person can reason and say, oh, he wants me to move. So they'll eventually move. To where a horse doesn't reason, and they won't step away like you want them to. And I've shown people this really. I can move a horse with just pulsating my hand on a horse's shoulder and get him to move over. But if I put my hand on that horse and start pushing, he'll actually push back against me and make like a pose standing there.
And that's such a good concept, Terry, because you think about it, like even when you ride, right, we talk about don't just pull on the rein, but you can even squeeze and release, like you're squeezing water out of a sponge. Or even when you use your leg, you push and release. You don't just haul off and kick them, and you don't just haul off and haul on their face, because they're going to go ahead and resent that. But if you do it in a very soft, methodical way, you're absolutely right. Less is more.
And like I'm a really big believer in this, and I'm not saying I'm right in everything, but it works for me. I take my leg and I get in rhythm with the horse's stride. Like if I want him to take a step over or whatever, and I swing, I use my boot top on the horse. And as I get in rhythm with his feet, I can get more bend out of his body and get him to drive over, and the leg just swings in rhythm. It's not a kick, it's a swing. And if I'm not getting what I want, I don't get harder, I get bigger. Because what people don't understand, it's not only your leg that's working. If you let that leg swing, your hip starts to rock into that horse's back. And you're going to get as much with your hip rocking as you do with the leg swinging.
And yes, then, that's that whole concept of feel. You know, like if you go ahead and you use alternating legs on their barrel, you're going to get a bigger walk.
Exactly.
And if you do it in the correct rhythm.
Right. And what I try to get people to do, their instincts start to take over again, but I make them count to four. And if you count to four over and over and over, you start to count the rhythm of the horse's feet. And if they pay attention to their count, they can tell where the horse is heavy or light, know which foot's hitting the ground harder. And I tell them, I said, that should be like one of those things that sets on a piano, it goes tick, 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 tick. Those strides, your count should always be the same.
And that's something in driving that we rely on.
Is it?
Yep. Yep, because you should be able to tell just by the way your horse's feet are hitting whether you've got it right or not.
Okay.
So we really count on that in driving. Well, Terry, we are just plain running out of time. If people want to learn more about you, I was just looking at your website. It's tmtrainingcenter.com. And boy, you've got a ton of stuff coming up. You're a judge, and you've got all kinds of clinics coming up. And I assume that's the best place to go is tmtrainingcenter.com?
Yes, sir.
All right, very good. And you're a reigning judge?
No, just I do 4-H and just open shows.
Okay, got it. All right, good. All right, very good. TMTrainingCenter.com, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Terry, thanks for being on, and we'll see you in the fall at our conference. We're thrilled to have you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Christy.
All right, very good. Well, it's good of him to join us here today. And why don't we take a break for a song, and then we're going to come back, and we are going to talk to Van Hargis. He's going to be on, and he's going to talk to us. We're going to continue the kind of conversation about instincts. And it's funny, because when you brought up this topic, I thought, well, this could really go anywhere, because it's an open-end kind of subject, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It is. And what's so neat about it, though, is that we never really think about this. You know, we talk about more kind of concrete things, like we got to feel this or we've got to do this. But this is very more conceptual based, and it can go anywhere. But it does make sense. Like, I love that we went down the trailer loading path, because that's a great one for this topic.
Yep, yep. Because I don't think anybody has an instinct about that.
No, I loved how you said that. I think you're right.
It's not something that you just get naturally. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break for our song. We'll be right back.
I've always been the shy and quiet type, biding my time until the time was right. Driving through life with one foot on the brake, missed every chance that I did not take. Now I'm gonna do whatever I please. No, I'm not. nothing's gonna have a hold on me. Maybe some crazy thing, not gonna be afraid. I'll stand up straight and tall, made up my mind, I'm gonna do it all. I'm gonna do whatever I please. Yeah, no, nothing's gonna have a hold on.
Join the Certified Horsemanship Association for our annual conference October 22nd through the 25th, 2015, at the American Quarter Horse Association Hall of Fame and Museum and the Holiday Inn. This event is open to the public, and participants will be able to ride on great horses provided by West Texas A&M University and the National Reining Horse Association. Great horsemanship sessions, education, vendors, silent auction, networking, and much more. Visit www.chainstructors.com and go to the conference tab to register today. We are excited to meet you.
Christy, before we get to our next guest, Van Hargis, we should mention that Christy and I recorded this interview last week. As some of you know, he fell off one of his training horses the other day and hurt himself pretty bad. Here is what he said on Facebook. Friday, while I was training a very nice and sweet young filly, she lost her footing during a stop and got her feet tangled in the sand. This resulted in her sort of sitting down, and doing so fell backward right on top of me. The incident was in no way the filly's fault. She was simply trying very hard to please me. However, her fall on me resulted in me getting the brunt of her weight slammed onto my pelvis. Sadly, the injuries caused were several fractures to some very specific bones in my lower back, sacrum, and pelvis. As of a late-night visit by the doctor here at the hospital in San Antonio, we are conferring about possible surgeries to repair or stabilize the broken bones. He did have surgery, and the doctors told him that he will recover in time. Our thoughts and prayers are certainly with his family for a speedy recovery. But why don't you introduce him now for the interview that we pre-recorded?
And up next is Van Hargis. And Glenn, this is so neat. I actually met Van through expos as well, much like I did Terry. I've seen him for years at different things. And he just has such a great way about him. He's such a good public speaker. He's a very good clinician. He's had a wide variety of things in his past, much like Terry has. So we'll chat with him more about those when he comes on. But everything from Western Pleasure, trail, calf roping, team roping, steer wrestling, some hunter work. So he can do a variety of things, and we're thrilled to have him on today. He's in Sulphur Springs, Texas, and he even for a while lived in New Zealand, and I'm all about the Kiwi land. I think New Zealand's great. So without further ado, Van is going to be on now. So hi, Van. Thanks so much for being on the show today. Very much appreciated.
Oh, Christy, thank you so much. It's always an honor, you know, to be a part of programs such as yours, so I really appreciate you guys for having me on board.
Well, we're so excited because, of course, you're going to be coming to our conference this fall in Amarillo, Texas, and you'll be keynoting for us and also doing some talks with people up on horses. So we're thrilled, and I love this. Glenn, you're going to enjoy one of the titles of his talk at our conference is Reduce Your Problems to the Ridiculous.
I need that,
you know,
actually.
I love that.
What happens if they're a ridiculous problem to begin with?
Well, you know, isn't it funny? Most of them are.
Right. You know, it's always the little problems that take up 90% of your time and mental energy.
Exactly. You know, there's a gentleman, I wish I could remember his name, so I love giving credit where credit's due, but he wrote a book series several years ago, and it's called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And I totally agree with that from almost like a human perspective, you know, because sometimes we look at these little bitty things and we just kind of, before you know it, we've really lost a huge percentage of our day because we've allowed those little things that probably didn't matter a whole heck of a lot to consume so much of our time. But in reality, like when I look at it in the horse world, so many times we look at our problems as being so big and overwhelming. In the reality, they are a sum of a lot of little bitty tiny things. That if we take care of those little bitty tiny things and concentrate on those little things that we can do and that we can achieve, before you know it, those big problems just almost go away. And it's almost one of those situations where I looked at that and said, man, we could really do that in everyday life as well. So do I really agree with don't sweat the small stuff? You know, I don't know. Sometimes I think it's okay to do it as long as we just don't find ourselves stressing over them.
Right, and let it stick you into one place all the time and be stuck there, you know, and not able to move
exactly.
on.
Yep,
so Van, before we get started with our topic today, could you tell the listeners exactly where you're located and give them a little bit more information about your background?
Oh, absolutely, Christy. Well, I'm located in Victoria, Texas, which is considered the crossroads of South Texas. We are kind of in the middle of Houston, San Antonio, Austin, and Corpus Christi. So it's kind of a little crossroads area right there. Not too awfully far from the coast, and yet not too awfully far from some other really cool things. But I've been down here in the Victoria area now for right at 5 years. I originated from Northeast Texas, was born and raised just outside of Sulphur Springs, Texas, and I went to school, college, all up in that same part of the world, and started my business there. And really what kind of got me going into being a public speaker and a clinician was really almost by accident. I moved to New Zealand way back when, way back in the late 80s and the early 90s. And really, Christy, I was raised in an environment that everybody had horses, so I thought everybody knew everything there was to know about horses. So when I went to New Zealand, great horse people down there, but they started asking me questions that I just assumed everybody knew. And one thing led to the other, and before you know it, I started doing some clinics and some seminars, and it was at that point that I realized, wow, I've got an aptitude for that. And then when I came home back in 1991, it was just literally one thing led to another. I was asked to be on a little local television station out of Tyler, Texas, and that just exploded me in the East Texas area, especially doing clinics and presentations. And then actually the very first horse expo I ever did was in Louisville, Kentucky, at the Equitana, back when we had Equitana here in the United States as well. And so from then on, Ms. Christie, it's just been just an absolute grand journey for me. It's just been really, very fun. And my background, I guess, is kind of be summed up as probably the luckiest guy I know.
Isn't that great? They say when you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Van, that's not true because I get to work with Christy every month. That makes me the luckiest guy you know. I'm just saying.
Oh, well, bless your heart. That's a sweet statement.
I will pay you all later when we're off the air. I appreciate it very much. So, Van, we're talking today about instincts, whether they're horse or human. So let's launch right in here. How do you utilize horse and human instincts in your training and teaching style?
Well, the first thing I do, Christy, is I want people to know what our instincts really are. And, you know, when we look at a human instinct versus the instinct of our horses, they are two totally different things coming from the depths of our souls from two totally different areas. And what I mean by that is that horses are prey animals. And because they're prey animals, their first instinct is to do what? To leave. If anything goes wrong, they want to run at a certain distance and stop and look back and say, what the heck was that? You know, where they want to act and then, or basically they really want to react and then ask questions later. We humans have kind of that same self-preservation thing, but ours is a little bit different in the sense that our instincts makes us want to flee sometimes, but we also want to close down. It's almost instinctual for us to, and when I say close down, I mean almost in a physical sense. We want to close down in, almost in, instinctively kind of draw up, if you will, into that fetal type position. And whenever we're combining those two things, and that's, and I'm going to say this with all due respect to the industry, you know, we've heard a term over the last several years called natural horsemanship. And when I look into the depths of natural horsemanship, I totally agree with it. But at the same time, I also want people to realize that in order for us to become really good riders, in order for us to really be able to work with horses really well, we almost have to fight our instincts. We can't do instinctual things because if we do, we're probably going to hamper our relationship with our horse. And again,
or end up
that,
in the hospital. Can I throw that in?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. For example, like if we're riding a horse and let's say the horse spooks, and in fact, we just had a clinic recently just over that topic, the understanding and the concept of fear, trust, and confidence. And a lot of that, Miss Christie, had to deal with understanding our instincts and how our instincts sometimes will basically feed our fears. And yet when we start developing trust in ourselves and how we retrain ourselves to respond rather than react, and we also train our horses to respond rather than react, that creates a sense of trust, both trust within ourselves and of course trust within our animal. And that becomes the bridge, you see, to develop confidence. So whenever I'm thinking of instincts, I think, wow, you know, they're very important for us to have, both for us as the horses, because we need that self-preservation, but at the same time, we also have to learn to manage it to the point where we can be productive with another animal such as the horse. So that's kind of what I think of when I think of the instincts and what we can do. Because really, if we do an instinctual thing for us, if a horse says he sees something that may cause him want to bolt away, our instinct is to grab on with our feet and to hold them back with a bit and oftentimes to yell at them. You know, we yell the word, whoa, and oftentimes that startles the horse, which in turn fuels his instincts even more. And so we just have to kind of retrain our bodies to kind of work more unnaturally and train ourselves to respond. And that comes just over time and repetition.
I completely agree with you that those things do come into play a lot because, you know, that whole idea of the fetal position to protect the organs, right? This is what we're supposed to do. And so that's so counterintuitive of what we're actually supposed to do, especially when we're up on top of the horse. So
exactly.
Do you have any that you think when we look at our instincts that may end up that you want to bring up that are definite barriers versus ones that maybe even might be strengths?
Well, the strength is, You know, as well as I do, Miss Christie, you make up a huge percent of this horse industry. Women, really, just a few years ago, was 80-85% of the industry, and I would be willing to bet you that it's even more so now. So let's just say it's somewhere in the 90 percentile of women over men in the horse industry. And why I bring that up is because women, by nature, are nurturers. And women, in my opinion, by nature, also have a much keener sense of their instincts. They tend to be a bit more intuitive. I think men sometimes allow our egos to kind of stand in the way of our intuitions, whereas women have a tendency to, I guess, sense a certain thing. And because of that, I really want women to really tune into those, listen very carefully to what their gut is really telling them, but at the same time, combine that intuitiveness with a certain amount of logic and understanding of the animal they're working with. And of course, in this case, it's with a horse. Because a lot of times I've seen folks that will be so intuitive, and yet before you know it, they're fueling their fears by rather than just kind of going with intuition and kind of feeling it and analyzing it, what they do instead is they begin to worry. And that worry oftentimes fuels a fear. And the fear oftentimes gets to the point where it almost hampers them from doing what they really, really want to do and what they really want to achieve. So I really want those women to use that instinct to their advantage and at the same time learn to listen and manage it to the point that they can still seek out their goals and achieve those goals as well.
And I really like that you bring up women and men, because you're right. Instinctually, we are very different, and hunters versus gatherers and, you know, from Mars versus from Venus, we've kind of heard them all. And I think you're right. Our approach to working with an animal, especially an animal like a horse, might be very different than the male approach to doing the same and being able to kind of understand which strengths of both work and which might be a little bit more of a hindrance towards that partnership being better. I love that you brought that up.
Yeah. You know, and oftentimes I've noticed that women make really good, they make really good horsemen. And the reason they do is because I think oftentimes men tend to think of things of being able to achieve things physically. In reality, it's not a battle that we're going to win, is it? I mean, when you consider the fact that we're working with a horse who is, you know, three or four times larger than we are, and sometimes even bigger than that, it just doesn't make sense for us to think in terms of overcoming him physically. And women, because of their stature, very few of them ever really think about achieving something from a physical standpoint. They tend to want to be more thinkers and a little bit more logical in their thinking and how to achieve things, and especially when other beings are concerned. We as men, we have to kind of learn that physical part doesn't always work. Women have to learn that at the same time, they have to kind of beef up a little bit sometimes their assertiveness. But that's one thing I think is so great about horses. It teaches those who tend to want to be a bit more physical that maybe we need to stop and think a little bit more from the other perspective. Yet at the same time, it also teaches women how to use their logic, but at the same time, practice their sense of assertiveness. And between that, that's why one of the reasons I say all the time, horsemanship is an opportunity to practice humanship. It really does offer us an opportunity to recognize our strengths and further weaken, I guess you could say, our weaknesses. In other words, just work on our strengths, identify our weaknesses, and then just chip away at those weaknesses until eventually they become strengths as well.
It sure does. So, you know, with that, for our listeners today, Van, what would you tell them are some specific exercises? Maybe we can start on the ground, and then we'll talk about ones up in the saddle. But what are some specific exercises that you might use with your clients, with their horses on the ground, to help them kind of understand these instincts and to help them become better partners with their horses?
Well, Ms. Christie, first of all, I realize that at least in my clientele, I'm going to say 98% of the women that I work with and 98% of the men that I work with, we're going to find ourselves as riders. We do a lot of groundwork, but we do our groundwork and everything else because we eventually want to be in the saddle. And then on the other side, even those of us who think we spend a lot of time in the saddle, the reality is we spend the majority of our time on the ground around our horses. So when I'm working with my groundwork, and when I say groundwork, I mean everything from catching the horse to, you know, getting to the point where we're lunging them, getting to the point where we're getting ready to get into the saddle. Everything is about, my opinion, everything is about what's going to make the horse more manageable and rideable. In other words, what are we going to do on the ground that's going to help us in the saddle? So the first thing I get my clients to do is recognize that everything they do on the ground is going to be applicable to what's going to take place in the saddle. So in my mind, when I'm, say, riding a horse, I'm thinking of the body parts of the horse that I want to control and the body parts that I need to be able to manipulate, if you will, to have a better ride. For example, if I'm lunging a horse, say, to the left, I want the horse to be lunging around me in such a nice little arc that from the tip of their nose, they're soft, through their shoulders, and all the way through their rib cage. Therefore, when I'm applying pressure to them, when I'm doing my lunging work or my groundwork, I almost pretend that my body on the ground becomes the same as my left leg on the horse if I'm traveling a circle to the left. In other words, I focus on exactly where my left leg would be if I was riding, and I kind of apply my energy right toward that spot. At the same time, since I've got the horse on the lunge line and I'm lunging into the left, I've got my left hand on the lunge line, and I'm wanting the horse to always stay soft on my left hand. I never want him to pull against me. And yet I'm also using my rhythm of my footfall and the rhythm of my body to keep driving the horse forward. And again, in my mind, I'm seeing myself and almost feeling myself being in the saddle as I do that. And what that allows me to do from the ground, allows me to watch the horse's behavior. It allows me to watch the horse's natural footfall. It lets me watch some of the horse's habits. And then when I do get in the saddle, it kind of already has me with armed, if you will, with that information that I need to help the poor horse perform once I'm in the saddle.
Man, I love that, because we always talk about natural aids, and the natural aids that we use are, of course, our body parts, and we talk about feet, legs, hands, voice, and feet can include, of course, you know, your weight aids. And you just mentioned all. You mentioned you can use all four of those natural aids while you lunge the horse, right? And I think so many times when we're on the ground with our horses, and like you said, unfortunately, because I think more of us would rather be in the saddle, but most of what we do with our horses every day because of time is on the ground. So if we can still apply those four natural aids while we're on the ground doing things, I think that that's such a great way to explain that.
And, you know, and we do, and that's the thing is that that also gives us the tools that we need. And again, I'm always thinking from almost a mental standpoint. When we feel as if we are in greater control of our horse, and when I say that, I don't mean like we're trying to control the horse from, you know, as if a manhandling and that sort of thing. That's not what I mean at all. But when we feel like we're working with the horse and we're able to control those horses' body parts in such a way, that gives us, I think, a tremendous amount of confidence when we do take that next step from the ground into the saddle. And that's one of the things we work on a lot with our clinics, is that at any point we find ourselves a little bit afraid of what's maybe happening in the saddle. Let's go back sometimes on the ground and better understand what's going on there. Because if a horse is pulling on us on the ground, it's going to be pulling on us in the saddle. If a horse is going to be disrespectful to us on the ground, it's only going to be compounded with in the saddle. So oftentimes, I think the best way to gain control as well as confidence, both in ourselves and confidence in our horses, is going back to that groundwork and identifying the areas that need some help. In other words, going back to the strengths and weaknesses thing, identifying those areas that need some help, work on those things, and eventually they'll become strengths. And then once we're in the saddle, it's magical how those things just start coming together.
And you're absolutely right. So then moving on then for those listeners that feel like they've got quite a good control on the ground, what are some specific exercises, be it at walk, jog, lope, or walk, trot, canter, or be it in the arena or out on the trail, that you recommend once you're up in the saddle?
Well, really, before we ever take that first step, I want the folks to do a pilot check. So one of the first things we do, if you want to call it an exercise, then at least I think it's an exercise, but it's what I call a pilot check. Before we ever go anywhere, once our butt hits the saddle, I want them to pause and do what I call a pilot check. I want them to make sure that everything feels right. Are my stirrups adjusted properly? Did somebody else ride my saddle last time? Are they too long? Are they too short? Or are they set just for me? Adjust, you know, feel to make sure the saddle feels secure enough for you. Once we make that check, then we also want to make sure that our head stall looks correct. I really want that done before we get in the saddle, but I want to do it again once we're in the saddle. And then I want to start doing a check with my horse. Is my horse responding? So I'll pick up from left rein and ask my horse to flex ever so slightly to the left and the same to the right. And then I want to make sure the horse has got the vertical flexion. At the same time I'm doing this, I'm also training my horse to be patient. So I want the horse to learn that just because my butt hit the saddle doesn't mean we're automatically going somewhere. I want the horse to be patient, let me go through these steps. At the same time, this kind of establishes the relationship that I'm going to have with this horse today on this ride from the very beginning and from a quiet standstill. And from there, Christy, everything I do, and this is even on my upper end performance horses, I teach what I call nothing beyond the basics. Nothing that I do is anything more than just a basic, simple maneuver. And what I mean by that is that I like to keep things so incredibly simple, not for just my benefit, but also for the horse. So some of the exercises that I might do might be nothing more than, in the beginning, just asking the horse to yield his hindquarters one direction or the other. I want to make sure the horse and I are on the same page, that when I move my left foot back a little bit and just add a little bit of pressure on that rib cage, that I can get the horse to move his hips from left to right. And just one step, all I'm asking, I'll do the same thing with the other leg. So I'll put the right leg slightly back and just a little bit of pressure. And ask the horse to take a little bit of a step from right to left. I'll do the same thing with the shoulders. So I just want to make sure that the horse and I are on the same page and controlling those body parts. This gives me a little bit more confidence in my ability to communicate. And also at the same, it gives me a little bit more confidence in the fact that the horse is listening to my attempts to communicate. And then from there, we do the same thing at a walk. We just gradually get the horse moving out. I'll generally start working on some very, very small circles. And Miss Chrissy, I'll also make sure that I'm out away from everything. I tend to do this more toward the very middle of the arena. Rather than going around the arena and showing all the horses or the horses the things that they might need to be concerned about, like there might be a new banner in the arena or a new barrel or you name it. Rather than doing that, introducing the horse to those obstacles there, what I do is I get as far away from the obstacles as I possibly can, and I just focus on that little warm-up type exercise routine that the horse and I go through each and every ride. And then just like the Prairie Jabez, I just start asking the horse to expand the territory. And before you know it, the horse is so focused on me, doing the little bitty simple things, that we start walking past all the new things, and the horse pays very little attention because he's so focused on the leader. In this case, it would be me. So we focus on very simple, basic exercises, such as just controlling, again, the nose, hips, and shoulders. And then we graduate into a walk and do the same thing with those. And eventually graduate into a trot and then eventually into the canter. And those little simple steps, those little simple basic things done very gradually like that, I think helps develop that relationship of confidence between me and my animal.
And I think we're going to have to end on that. We've plain run out of time. Van can be found at VanHargis, HARGIS.com. And Van, you also have a podcast that you do. Tell everybody where they can find that.
Oh, they can find it on iTunes or Stitcher, and it's under the title of Ride Every Stride with Van Hargis, or they can just look up Van Hargis and Google that, and you'll eventually get to Ride Every Stride as well. But it is on iTunes. We publish weekly.
I just done my podcast player on my phone. I just added it, so I'll be taking a listen.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Dan. Thank you.
VanHargis.com is where you'll find him. Thanks so much for joining us, Van.
It's been my pleasure.
And you're going to be at the conference too, right? Isn't she? He going to be there, Christy?
He sure is. We're excited to have you in just a few months in October in Amarillo, Van. We'll see you there.
I'm so excited about this, Christy. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, once again, before we wrap the show here, Christy, good show, by the way. We want to thank all our guests for taking time out to stop by. Where can people find out more?
The best place is go to chainstructors.com, and you can also find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, all with chainstructors.com. And we have lots of education to share, and we would love to have you come and visit and start the networking.
And if you missed past episodes, Christy was here. She's always here on the third Tuesday of every month. But if you missed past episodes, just go to horsesinthemorning.com and search for CHA or Certified Horsemanship Association in the search, and it'll bring up all the past episodes, and you can take a listen to all of them there. The easiest way to listen to the recorded version of Horses in the Morning is on our app. Just go to the App Store, iOS or Android, and search for Horse Radio Network. It's simple. It's easy. It's the best way to listen. And that's about it for today. We'll see you again next month, Christy.
Okay, you have a good one, Glenn. Bye-bye.
All right, take care.